So we're going to take a look at the biomechanics. Essentially, how does a person get, in this case, consistency? So we're going to take a look at the key factors in the pitcher's biomechanics for fastball consistency.
Vaughn, a juvenile delinquent in the offseason in his major league debut.
I'm going to light your ass up, meat.
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches. Boy, how can these guys lay off pitches that close?
So, you know, what is Ricky Vaughn doing wrong in his mechanics, and what are some pitchers doing properly in their mechanics? So we published the study in the journal Sports Biomechanics, looking at the relationship between variability in baseball pitching kinematics and the consistency in pitch location. And so here's a video of our lab, our testing. You see those reflective markers, we put them on a pitcher, we do a calibration, we have cameras all in our lab over here, and then we could track with the multiple cameras, 12 cameras, where the reflective markers are moving on the pitcher and collect his three-dimensional biomechanics or motion. Now, in addition to this tracking system for the pitcher, we have a pitch FX system installed in our lab. Here's a picture of the camera. So we could track the ball movement in addition to the pitcher's biomechanics. So what we did was we had 47 healthy baseball pitchers come into our lab. And you can see there's a variety of levels, which we did on purpose, three professional down to two youth pitchers and a lot of high school and college pitchers, trying to see what biomechanics correlate to fastball consistency. So we had each of them, we told them to throw 10 fastballs down the middle, and we have a strike zone ribbon in our lab. And we say, aim for the middle of that strike zone with your fastball. We, as I showed in the video, we have a 12 camera motion capture system. The company is called Motion Analysis Corporation, and here are the cameras over here. They're collecting 240 pictures per second. They're electronically synchronized, and they're all tracking in three dimensions the 38 reflective markers we put on the pitcher. And like I said, we taught them to aim for fastballs down the middle. We have 60 feet, 6 inches inside our indoor lab for the testing. And then we use the pitch FX, which is back here and back here, to capture the ball velocity and also the horizontal position when it crosses home plate and the vertical position when it crosses home plate. So from that motion capture equipment, we calculate 20 kinematic parameters in every pitch. Kinematics means your body motions. And we calculate them using the software, BioPitch software that we customized at ASMI. So of the 20 kinematic parameters, 11 are a description of where the person is at the time of front foot contact. Everything from his arm position down to his stride length and everything like that. We have three measurements at the time of maximum external rotation or maximum arm cocking. And then the final, and then we have six more. The final six are taking a look at the arm and body at the time of ball release. So what we did was, again, we told each pitcher to aim for fastballs down the middle. And you would think that they would repeat their mechanics every time. So what we did for each of these 20 measurements is we measured them on every fastball. And the variability was, for any of those measurements, was defined as the standard deviation of the measurement among that pitcher's 10 fastballs. Now, as far as the outcome, again, this is actually data for one of the pitchers. We told them to aim for 10 fastballs right down the middle. And they this pitcher hit these 10 different places here. And then what we did was, for each pitcher, we calculated his mean location, and then we, for each of his 10 trials, we calculated the two-dimensional distance from that location. And then we averaged that. So we averaged that, and that is the variability in the pitcher's consistency of his fastball. So again, we have 20 kinematic measurements of your body, and then we have pitch location variability. And we use a stepwise linear regression analysis to look at these 20 variables compared to the outcome of pitch consistency. What we found was of the 20 variables in the stepwise regression, 15 of them got thrown out and 5 were left in the model. And these 5 kinematic variables explained more than 50% of the variation of the contribution to pitcher's consistency and location. 3 of these variables were measured at the time of front foot contact. So we measured upper trunk tilt. You can see this pitcher has a little uphill tilt. Shoulder abduction, which is essentially a biomechanics term, anatomy term for armpit angle. So it's a 0 when your arm's at the side and 90 when the arm is even with the shoulders. And shoulder horizontal abduction, that's a little harder to picture. That's at the time of front foot contact, essentially how much is your elbow pinched behind your shoulders. And if your elbow's out here in line, it's 0. If it's pinched behind, that's horizontal abduction angle. The other 2 variables that correlated or were in the model for variability happened at the time of maximum arm cocking, which was shoulder external rotation, essentially how far back you rotate your arm, and shoulder horizontal adduction, essentially the opposite of this. It's how far your elbow is essentially stuck in front of your chest at that time. So these 5 variables were the answer about getting fastball consistency. So interestingly, again, we looked at the whole body, but 3 of the variables occurred at the time of foot contact. 2 were at the time of arm cocking, but all 5 of the variables, even though we looked at the whole body, all 5 of the variables that ended up in the model involved the shoulders. And so it seems that the key for pitching consistency is you're getting your arm in the right position at both foot contact and ball release, at foot contact and arm cocking. Truth is, having worked with a lot of pitchers, it's very hard to coach or tell someone to adjust in this point. It's easier to correct flaws here. So our recommendation is, although the arm position at both these times are critical, the best strategy is probably for a pro coach or anyone at a lower level to work on consistency of the arm at the time of foot contact, meaning the shoulder upper trunk tilt should be the same every time, not more uphill or more flat other times. Shoulder abduction or armpit angle should be the same, not the elbow higher or lower. And shoulder horizontal abduction, the pinching behind the trunk, should be the same every time. So that's all I got there. And I this is intentionally a fairly short presentation, but I'm going to open it up for questions for this, and then we could open it up to questions about anything else in biomechanics. So Phil asks, is horizontal abduction the most damaging for the health of a pitcher's arm? Some injuries, horizontal abduction over here is related to the front of the anterior or the front of the shoulder capsule. So when people have tears, pitchers have tears on the front of the shoulder, it could be due to horizontal abduction. Frankly though, the other 2 motions, shoulder abduction, which is how high your arm is, and shoulder external rotation have direct links as well to shoulder injuries. For instance, pitchers who can't get their arm back or go back too far, they could have impingement in the back of their shoulder and lead to tears. And the shoulder abduction, it's interesting. You know, obviously there are some pitchers who are more over the top and some who are more on the side, but all those pitchers who are healthy in our lab, their abduction angle is always about 90 degrees. And we've shown that to get a higher arm slot, you tilt your trunk. You don't tilt your arm angle in the armpit angle, because the way we were made, the way God made our shoulders, the humerus fits in the socket a certain way, healthy. And if you drop it low or too high, you could have a kind of a grinding in the shoulder. Matt Chan, my buddy, says, great work. Curious what all these variables you chose for the stepwise linear regression. Why we chose those 20 variables. Again, we have about 40 variables we look at in pitchers. We hypothesized which body motions we think might have been related to consistency, and also which variables are correctable. So for instance, one variable we did not put in the model was shoulder internal rotation velocity, how fast your arm moves. Because if that showed up, you can't just say move your arm faster. So we picked variables we could coach. Okay, Christian says, did you measure and or find anything related to the length of your arm extension, stride extension, limb length, height, et cetera? We did not, these are good questions. I didn't think about this. We did not look at the anatomical anthropometric measurements. In other words, we didn't look at the arm length compared to the consistency, but we did look at things like stride length. That was part of the model, stride length was. So one of the beauties about baseball is whether height is an advantage, and you know it's certainly an advantage in basketball to be taller. But as we know, baseball pitchers have a variety of height, and so this study did not really use that. But we did not look at that. David Hughes was asking the same question. Bennett asks, have you done studies? Oh, the thing's moving. Have you done studies on what pieces of suboptimal technique are hardest and easiest to correct? Yeah, good question, Bennett. We have done a study on. We had a different study where we had about 50 or 60 pitchers who had been analyzed in our lab twice by coincidence. They came, we analyzed them. They went away, whether a high school kid or a pro, and they came back to the lab a year later or 3 years later because of circumstances. And we looked at those 50 or so pitchers, and we looked at what we told them on the first evaluation: lengthen your stride, drop your arm, things like that. And we and that's a published paper. You could email me if you want to get a copy of it, or do a search on my name. But of those variables, the flaws at the time of foot contact and the windup and foot contact flaws were fixed more often. Well, first of all, overall, the pitchers fixed about half of their flaws from their first visit to second visit. And the ones that they fixed best more often were the ones at foot contact, where the ones at ball release later in the mechanics were fixed less often. That's why I actually gave the conclusion here to focus on the earlier mechanical flaws. Mark asks, is the screwball most stressful? Sorry, Mark, I really haven't studied much about the screwball. David asks, can you rule out that the variability in shoulder positions stems from compensation for variability in leg placement earlier in the delivery? Yes, David. We looked at leg placement, stride length, and also whether the front foot landed open or closed. And those did not vary with pitch variability. So this variability in arm and shoulder and arm position was not due to a variability lower like the legs. The legs were consistent. The arm is where the inconsistency occurred. Whew. Okay, Nate asks, in terms of coaching and trying to get a pitcher to be at the same spot when their foot lands, what is the best coaching technique to help pitchers to get to this point? Again, these pitchers were pretty consistent with where their foot was landing. What they were not consistent with was where their arm is at the time of foot contact. So again, at that time, they weren't consistent here. And it's hard to generalize, Nate, because different people have different flaws, but it really comes down to simplifying the arm path, the path of the two arms. Some guys have some extra motions in their arm path, and a lot of pitching coaches try to simplify that. And also about the trunk tilt, especially the younger guys, high school and below, some of them are trying to kind of crank back and get extra, but that's not what the pros do. They kind of keep it more level. So from a pitching coach point of view, these are pretty coachable things for most people, trying to understand where their body is and get a consistent arm path. Tim asks, is there any trade-off in velocity when a pitcher has these ideal biomechanics for fastball consistency? Yeah, a good question, Tim. We have other studies that looked at what kinematics correlated with velocity. We did not tie it together with this study. Some of the key variables in maximizing velocity were getting the most external rotation at the shoulder, but also the timing between when where your foot lands and when you rotate your hips, pelvis, and when you rotate your upper trunk and when you get your arm up. So for velocity, timing is really key. And that was a separate study. We didn't tie it in with this one. Sachin asks, in the video, the pitcher was seen on a flat surface. Oh, good question. Were they on a mound or an actual field? Would the inclination of that the pitcher on the mound cause small effects? Excellent question. Maybe it wasn't clear, but all the pitching was done on an indoor mound, regulation size mound, 10 inches high and 60 feet, 6 inches. So it was on a mound. And yes, if they pitched on flat ground, I've read a lot of papers where they have pitchers, biomechanics papers, they have pitchers pitch on flat ground into a wall that's 20 feet away. And they say we study the accuracy of pitching or whatever. And there's a lot of limitations. If you don't have a person throwing 60 feet, 6 inches, and you're not on a mound, those are big assumptions and a good question, because we certainly have them pitch on a mound in the full distance. Brian asks, at what level do coaches need to be able to detect inconsistencies? How can the motion consistency be fine-tuned with the naked eye? Those are two questions. So first of all, about when should coaches work on mechanics? We've done some other studies that have shown that successful youth pitchers all the way to pro pitchers have the same proper mechanics at the youth level and up to the pro level are the same. So it's never too early to work on proper pitching mechanics. Of course, a 7-8-year-old, you're working on throwing mechanics. They're not really pitching yet. But once kids start pitching, it's not too early. And frankly, our studies where we followed kids growing up, we found that we want to correct their mechanical flaws as soon as possible. And then as they reach puberty, high school, et cetera, if they have good mechanics, they can build strength on that and then keep the good mechanics. I do want to, there are a couple of little differences between how youth pitch and adults, but as far as their arm motion and foot, but we teach the kids to aim for what the adults do properly. So we suggest teaching proper mechanics as early as possible. Don't worry about the velocity of the joints and the forces that will build with the strength. How much can you do fine tuning with the naked eye? That's a big problem, Brian. You can't do a lot of these things with the naked eye. And sometimes you're stuck with it, but the truth is you can't replace what's happening in biomechanics in our lab and some of these advanced systems in the equipment in the stadiums. Will asks, which variable most affects a pitcher's arm flying high, straight rather than bent at the release point? Okay, so if I understand what Will is saying, which variables affect the arm, pitcher's arm flying open, sorry, rather than bent? I'm not really sure what that means, but if you're talking about this or this, I think the key is to have your shoulders fairly level at the time of foot contact, because the pitcher who lands like this or leaning back, then they're just a wobbly top. They're like a wobbly spinning top. If you land in a strong position, you'll have a consistency when you come around. Emma asks, you looked at different levels of pitchers. Do you see any significant differences between the groups? Good question, Emma. We really did not have enough data, enough subjects to break it into the different levels. I would like to do it. We have done previous papers looking at we have published previous papers looking at 50 kids versus 50 adults versus 50 high school. And we have seen that at the higher levels, they are more consistent. So again, I said before, proper mechanics for youth and for pros are the same. And when we compared the different levels, the up to the pros, they have more velocity, more force, but they have less variability. That is a proven fact. We haven't done the variability compared to the pitch location, but we have shown that at the lower level pitchers have more variability within themselves from pitch to pitch. Eric Barr Eric Burris asks, was pitch variability, pitch velocity variability considered? No, we didn't work looking that. We looked at pitch location, not velocity, but that probably is a factor. Martin asks, anything related to the fingers? We have done other studies. I did a study with a group in Japan about where we had a ball with sensors in it to see what their pressure is on the different fingers. I don't have the answers memorized, but that data is out there as well. I just don't have it off the top of my head. Okay, let me keep going for a few until I get the, Mark asks, is consistency in the shoulder attributes you mentioned better achieved by greater flexibility in the shoulder or greater strength? Does greater flexibility maintain consistency better as a pitcher tires from higher pitch count than shoulder strength? Mark, I think that's a great point, and I would absolutely agree with you. What I've seen is pitchers, anecdotally, pitchers who are inconsistent in their mechanics lack the strength. More than the flexibility, they lack the strength to be consistent. So yes, mechanics is completely tied into strength and flexibility. Let's see. John asks, did the pitchers have the same amount of warm-up before throwing the fastballs? Yes, good question. So our standard procedure, again, at asmi.org, there's a whole video that explains it. But the pitchers show up, they sign consent forms and history forms, have they ever been hurt, things like that. They then put on the tight clothes, shirt, no shirt, pants. We put the little dots on them. We then give them as much time to warm up as they want. They could stretch, they could run around, whatever they want to do. We basically tell them they're the starting pitcher for the game. And then they could hop on the mound, they play catch with us, they could then do one or two warm-up pitches or 100, whatever they want. So they are ready for the first inning. Okay, the last question, let's see. And let me pick a good one. So JP asked, do you look at the variability of foot contact placement and does it impact location variability? Yes, we looked at three things about the front foot. We looked at the stride length. We looked at whether the front foot was open or closed, like step to third base side or first base side, and also the angle of the front foot. We looked at all three of those things and none of them were in the final model as key variables for consistency. Okay, I think that is the end of my time, and thank you. Anyone who wants to contact me can contact me at ASMI. Go to the ASMI.org website. You can find my email address there. Happy to talk to you and glad to be part of it. Thanks.